are covered for their actions that cause us to have to repay money.
We have, legally, we have liability.
We do have liability.
They're talking about protecting it, so. I have a question. I assume Section 3 refers to the major house bill you've got over on the other side. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. The Environment and General Services has a House Bill 2152, which is pending, I believe, in Ways and Means. And if 2152 becomes law and allows General Services to revise their liability administration fund programs that they have apparently planned on doing, then this bill will not be needed and would self-destruct.
Well, how would you feel? I have a proposed amendment for this bill. I'd like to. Could you give him a copy of that? One of the things I'm very concerned about is the nonprofit corporations that are receiving federal monies. And what my amendment proposes, and if I could show this to the members, it's in your workbook packet, one, this series of bills. And I had originally thought of putting it on 272, but I think 72 might be more appropriate. On the second page of that, it would require a report to the Legislative Assembly with this information with respect to nonprofit corporations receiving Federal Job Training Partnership Act money. Has everybody got it here?
What bill?
It's on attached 272. At least help us get a handle on this. And it would include, in other words, these consortiums, nonprofit corporations that are being set up now for economic development, which are not under the open records law, as I understand it. And I don't think they're being publicly audited, as far as I know, unless you're doing it. Are you doing it?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure. I was trying to read the bill. You're saying that a nonprofit corporation...
What my amendment proposes is that any nonprofit corporation receiving Federal Job Training Partnership Act funds, there shall be a report each year to the Legislative Assembly, which will include the total amount of dollars received from each service delivery area, and the state agency administering the funds, the activities conducted and the equipment purchased with the funds, and if the funds qualify as, quote, job development, employment-generating activities, or development of job openings under Section 204 of the Federal Job Training Partnership Act, the corporation shall indicate the number of job placements for trainees resulting from those activities. In other words, if we're giving out all this money, let's see if we've got some results. We know what a fiasco the revenue bonds were. So let's not repeat the same performance. Let's make sure when this public money is given out, that we know we're getting results back.
Yes,
so, and particularly, this particular area is the one that's most fraught with potential for abuse. So would you have any objection if we required a report such as that?
Madam Chairman, if I'm understanding the words as I read it here, virtually all of this information will be available to the legislature through a combination of the annual audits that the outside audit firms do of the private industry councils and their operations, and through our annual monitoring or assessment that we do.
Well, this is
a combination of those two. Every one of those particular issues are covered, and we would have information on that.
You wouldn't have any problem giving us a report like this.
Madam Chairman, any time that we have requests from the legislature or one of the committees for the information, we'll certainly provide it if we have it.
Madam Chair, may I ask Holly Miles? She's had the same amount of time to look at it as we have, but do you have any comments on it, Holly?
I'd like to, for the record, indicate that we are requiring all of the private industry councils to abide by the open records and the open meetings law, even if they are a private corporation. That's part of our contract with them, even though they would be normally exempt from that, because, and the feeling backed by the governor is this is public money, and therefore there should be a public process for the decisions about how that money is spent and how it's accounted for.
Okay, but I'm not talking just about the PICs. For example, in my own area, as you know, there is a nonprofit corporation being created with called the Metropolitan Partnership, which includes the City of Eugene, City of Springfield. There's going to be a lot of public money in there from their general funds, from Lane County if they sign the agreement,
and they have budgeted $300,000 from the Job Training Partnership Act to go into that nonprofit corporation. I'm talking about these other spin-off nonprofit corporations that may be contracting with PICS and this kind of thing. And I don't believe that those are subject to either the open meetings, open records law, open meetings law, or public auditing requirements.
That would be something that we would be unfamiliar with because our contract is with the SBAs or with the private industry councils.
And but they can subcontract.
They can subcontract.
And this is, to the committee members, this is what I'm concerned about. That still is, these subcontracts can be all public money.
We do require that any subcontracts include the same provisions of our contract with the service delivery area in them. So they should be passing on those same requirements of open meetings and open records.
Well, could we get copies of those contracts?
Sure.
Holly, what's your feeling about reporting to us what these nonprofit corporations are doing?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Are we not having a public hearing on Senate Bill 72, or are we over onto another one?
I'm going to propose that amendment be put on Senate Bill 72.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I wanted, while they were up here, I wanted to get their reaction to it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, if I may, it's Senate Bill 272, I think you wanted to propose this.
No, I was going to, but it suddenly occurred to me that this bill would be a much better vehicle to take out Section 3 and place in this amendment.
I think to answer your question, Senator Hendrickson, we would have to look at this for more than 5 minutes to look at the impact.
Okay, well, we can hold this bill over. I'd like you to look at that. Maybe we should include profit-making corporations also. There are profit-making corporations that receive Job Training Partnership Act money.
That's correct.
Okay, well, we appreciate your coming forward today. I think you've explained the problem very well and what your proposed solution is to that problem. I'm glad that you've come forward with that. I hope the Attorney General will give me a copy of his opinion with respect to the issues involved. I think that as an attorney you can appreciate what the issues are and what the potential problem areas are in this kind of operation.
Most definitely.
So maybe you can work with my staff and get that information. Any further questions? Okay, well, is there anybody else here that's here to testify on Senate Bill 72, the risk management bill? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 72. And we'll open, I think for the sake of efficiency, we have the whole series of bills here. And we have two people that are signed up, so I'll ask them to come forward on Senate Bills 266 through 273. And Tom Garrett, is he here? I've got to get my numbers here. I'm going to do it.
For the record, Madam Chairman, my name is Thomas Barrett. I'm a program planner with Oregon Human Development Corporation. I have made available copies of comments to the committee for specifically to two of the bills. Let me say just in background while this material is being passed out, to give you an idea where our bias is as a corporation, we are a nonprofit corporation that has been involved in job training funding for nearly 20 years, 6 years in Oregon. We have sort of a unique perspective because we operate programs under JTPA that are nationally funded, so they don't come through the state job training partnership. Statewide organization, but because of the nature of the national migrant seasonal farm worker population, as well as the Native Americans, these are funded on a national basis. We also do contract work with the local SDAs, primarily through group training projects. So we have sort of a unique perspective because we're not only a contractor ourselves, but we also do subcontract work with the SDAs. In my general comments, would be that the Job Training Partnership Act does emphasize partnership, and most of the discussions have centered around the partnership involving industry, businesses with the the public sector. I would also like to emphasize the fact that the partnership should be broadened to include the individual participants who also have a stake in this whole process. I would also say, just as finally as a general comment, that I don't feel, as a corporation, we don't feel that all issues can be handled legislatively. There are a number of things that just simply do not lend themselves well to a legislative solution, but can be handled through public hearings such as this, access to information and a responsive program administration, which would deal with trouble spots. I'd like to comment specifically on two bills, Senate Bill 271, which my understanding would broaden the membership of the private industry councils to include eligible program participants. As a corporation, we have operated nearly exclusively with advisory boards made up of participants in the program. We feel that this broadens the input that we have. It helps us provide better program quality. It frankly, maybe as a community-based organization, we're more sensitive to this because we are coming right from the community. It tends to make us more sensitive to what the needs of the community people really are. So our recommendation would be to speak in favor of this bill, that participants should be a part of the PICS, with a suggestion that it would be difficult to have active participants on the PIC, and I would suggest that the language be included, be broadened to include prior participants as well as current participants. This would avoid the rapid turnover, which could cause an administrative problem. So, for example, in our own organization, for our board of directors, program participants and previous program participants can serve for 2 to 3 years, and it's been very workable for us. And this is something we did under the CETA legislation as well.
So you're, in your programs, I realize you're different because you report directly to the Federal Department of Labor.
That's right, Madam Chair.
But you do have advisory committees of participants.
That's right. That's right. The advisory committee is made up of people from industry as well as the public sector, but participants are a key part of it as well. Also, I'd like to comment on Senate Bill 273, which our understanding is that this would prohibit the Adult and Family Services from limiting the time recipients may be enrolled in the JETPA programs. We found it interesting in previous public hearings that there would be such a discrepancy in the way this program is administered, and just depending on where you live in the state, depends on what kind of services or eligibility you might have. We feel that there should be more consistency statewide, so that just because you live in one area of the state doesn't mean that you're denied longevity of services from that.
Senator Otto?
Will you please explain exactly what you mean by that?
Well, my understanding is that some participants are prohibited from participating in employment and training programs because they have exceeded the amount of time that the AFS will allow them to remain under support without actively seeking jobs. And we feel that that has not been applied fairly based on the testimony before this committee.
Well, you mentioned one area of the state against another area of the state. Would you explain that?
I don't have a copy of the hearing testimony. Actually, Madam Chair could probably clarify this in my own mind in terms of recalling this. But as I remember, you had cited Milwaukee or Gladstone, which had a very high sanctioning rate, and the state as a whole. This seems to be very unfair, and from our own participants, we have heard this too in the work that we have done.
It's another case of a very decentralized program, the Adult and Family Service Jobs Program. In my own area, the sanction rate is about 2-3%. And up around your area, they got practically half their caseload being sanctioned. So it is, and that means the mother and children's grant is being reduced. And in many cases, they call it, in the area of newspeak, voluntary sanctions, because the individual has does not want to drop out of a training program, so they're voluntarily having their grant reduced. So instead of, you know, encouraging people and helping them get retrained, they're being punished through this program if they, through the jobs program if they are in training. I also wanted to ask you with respect to Senate Bill 266. It was our thought that you should be serving on that council too, or some representative to coordinate your federal Job Training Partnership Act, which is under a different section of law, with the other titles that are operating under the council. So we have included you in Senate Bill 266, and by you, I don't mean you as an individual, but that program that you're working with for migrants and for Native Americans, because it appears to us that when you have a council that is making job training and employment policy for the state, we should be including our migrants and Native Americans who are beneficiaries of this other federal program. So I was just wondering, I noticed you didn't have any prepared testimony on Senate Bill 266, but do you have any thoughts with respect to having someone under those two sections? I think, was it Section 4 and Section 6?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just ran out of gas last night and putting this together. Yes, we would be in favor of doing that. We have, as a corporation, participated on many statewide task force and organizations with the State Job Training Partnership Act, and we would be in favor of that.
Is, right now, could you indicate, if you know, what the degree of coordination is between the Job Training Council, which administers a portion of the Job Training Partnership Act, and the program which administers another portion of the Job Training Partnership Act, the federal. I mean, in other words, the coordination between the council and Title IV and Title VI groups that are operating in the state. Is there any coordination?
Well, in the sense that they're both ultimately coming out of the Federal Employment and Training Administration, there would be that.
On the federal level?
On the federal level.
The regional level. Would that be in Region 10 or in Washington, D.C.?
It would be out of Washington, D.C.
So we've got our program being coordinated out of Washington, D.C.
Madam Chair?
Senator Howe?
Are you in any way connected to the coordination of it? Do you know, you have firsthand information and know about the coordination?
All I know is that, you know, it's obviously federal funds in there. I would expect that the Employment and Training Administration would be the one who oversees that.
You suspect is what you're saying? Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Senator Houck, it is sort of an odd situation because the migrant Title IV and Title VI Job Training Partnership Act program are operating within this state and providing service to Oregonians who are Native Americans or migrants, but are not, they're not, that's why this bill would include at least a representative on our council, so that there could be information exchange, some attempt to coordinate.
I didn't, no, Madam Chair, I did, I'm not questioning that.
No.
I'm questioning the reliability or the witness's ability to answer the question.
Okay.
And putting any kind of reliability on it, because he's not in any way connected with that kind of coordination.
Well, I guess I wasn't a good lawyer because I didn't establish a proper foundation that, in fact, he works for an agency that exclusively deals with participants under Title IV and Title VI throughout the state. And so I do believe that he would have some worthwhile observations because of that involvement. Okay, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. I have to say that as I have been around the state and talked with some people around the state that are involved in these programs, they have felt that it's a need to coordinate these programs because they may be operating in the same communities together. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any further questions before Mr. Barrett leaves? Okay. Again, he's with the Oregon Human Development Corporation, which provides services under Title IV-A. Okay. Robert Pierce and Robert Plimpton. Robin Pierce. Morning.
Good morning, Senator.
Sorry, I'll hand you there. I'm in the quick. Yeah.
Go first.
No, go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Senators of the Committee, my name is Robert Plimpton. I'm the President of the Boilermakers, Local 72 in Portland, Oregon. With me today is Robert Pierce, the ex-director of our training school, Local 72 in Portland, Oregon. I'm going to make mine rather brief, but the only bill I'm going to address this morning of this package is Senate Bill 268. It's requiring of government ethics law members of the Private Industrial Council. As you look at the bill, you see that there's a long list. It's about three pages long of everybody who is now presently under law required to make the following reporting requirements, with the exception, this is what the bill addresses, and it says each member of each private industrial council and each member of the state job training coordinating council appointed pursuant to the federal job training partnership act. Now I think this is essential. This has been an omission. I think it has to be rectified. And I will give you a personal reference what happened to us on a particular issue, why we think this is necessary. Local 72 ran a long-term training school for about 5 or 6 years, and we were dealing with CETA at that time. Somewhat the same kind of setup as JTPA, a little different. And when JTPA came in, we were asked by the city PIC of Portland to resubmit a grant. And we did so. The grant was for around $286,000 for training. And at that time, one of the members of the Portland PIC informed us that another member of the PIC was trying to submarine our grant, and that this individual was trying to get the grant to go to Oregon Human Development Corporation at that time, trying to transfer the grant from Boilermakers Training Tech to the welding school at Oregon Human Development Corporation. And this is how we were informed by one of the members of the Portland PIC. Subsequently, we found out who this individual was. His name was Jim Johnson. He was the personnel manager for FMC Corporation. He was also a member of the board of directors at that time of Oregon Human Development Corporation. Well, I felt that even based upon that, that had been a conflict of interest for him to be deciding on our grant, voting on our grant. But it went farther than that. At that particular time, we were in a decertification mode for our shop contract with the very same individual at FMC Corporation. We were also in the middle of the throngs of a marine labor dispute, and they were trying to get people to replace our people, train welders at FMC Corporation. And so we had a contractual dispute, we had a decertification election in the process, and this individual was voting on our grant. So based upon this information, I went to Commissioner Strawn's office. I didn't have a chance to talk to the Commissioner, but I talked to one of her staff, who expressed our displeasure over this particular situation, and all we asked was that he not be allowed to vote on our grant, that the rest of the people would either decide our grant on its merits. And we had a long-standing track record with the city of job performance. And I might add, we had over 100% placement. We had the best state program in the state, unseated. We talked to the chairperson of the PLC, of the PIC. She agreed to remove Mr. Johnson from the decision-making process, and it was done. And that was the end of that particular problem. But based upon that, I found at that time an incredible situation where an individual who has a direct, could have a direct influence on somebody's grant based upon their own personal prejudices, per se, or their own personal influence. And I think it's time that these kind of conflicts be removed, and that this law is a good step in that direction. And that's all I have to say on the subject.
Senator Howe.
Let me
you realize that the ethics laws would not speak to the, well, let me find a background here. Is the, what was the name of the Oregon Human Development
Corporation? Yes, that was
a profit, non-profit company?
I couldn't tell you, Senator, right off, I didn't do that much deep checking into it. I know there was a school, and they
okay, the ethics laws, number one, wouldn't apply to it. You know, unless that person was using his office for a personal gain, it was a non-profit, it wouldn't. The second thing is the ethics laws are not made to reduce or to stop any kind of action. The vote, only in land use cases. It still allows the person to vote even though that he has a conflict of interest. He just must declare it unless he's using his office for personal gain.
Right.
You can't do that, but the ethics laws are quite specific on this. And
I don't think the individual at that time declared his conflict of interest. That's number one. Nobody even knew about it until we raised the issue.
It does not do that. You know, that's about the only thing, unless that was a profit organization and he would benefit by the decision.
Senator, I can remember the chairperson's eyebrows when we explained our situation, and she said, well, why is he voting on your program?
Yeah.
So it was incredible to her to even consider that he never even told the rest of that pick that this had this direct conflict was between this, our union, and his organization. You see? And the law stipulates under Section F on this particular, under the JTPA, that no member of any council under this act shall cast a vote on the provision of services by that member or any organization which that member directly represents, or vote on any matter which would provide direct financial benefit to that member. And it would be a financial benefit if they could have trained non-union people to go in and break that strike.
Right. That's the law.
Yes, sir.
That's not the ethics law.
I understand that, but that's the law itself.
Okay.
I might say what this bill is aimed at getting at is disclosure. So in other words, if a PIC member serves and has business interests in holding that may not be aware to others in the community and is making decisions on public money that may be benefiting those, it gives the public a way to at least know what's going on and to enforce those kinds of conflict of interest that's already in the Federal Job Training Partnership Act.
Madam Chairperson, that's exactly where we're headed with this issue. Maybe I didn't state it correctly.
Yeah.
The key thing is we wouldn't have known about this issue unless a member of the PIC hadn't come to us and said, listen, this guy's voting on you, why? And when we started checking out who he was, we didn't even know he sat on the picket to that point.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that is the valid point. In fact, that's the only valid point is the disclosure. The rest of it is covered in the law.
Right.
Specifically, you know, making the legal and having enforcement capabilities of it. All this bill would do was to inform
the public
that there were those conflicts.
Wouldn't it also inform the chairperson of the PIC because she did not realize he had this conflict? She didn't know it either. You see, that was the key. When we explained it to her.
She's part of the public or he's part of the public.
Chair,
Senator Hammond.
Ethically, however, anyone serving on a public body using public funds has a moral and ethical responsibility to declare a conflict of interest. School board members, for instance, are not noted on the ethics forms.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I can't tell you how many times I declared conflict of interest on budget matters in my own local community and of course everyone knew everyone, fortunately. The public knew our backgrounds and where we served and certainly kept an eye out on us to make that kind of a disclosure. And it's just unfortunate that over one instance, and I don't know why, Madam Chair, I want to believe that the Oregon Human Development Corporation is a non-profit.
I'm not sure, ma'am. I'm not qualified to testify.
Or is it for profit?
Well, here's Tom anyway. Barrett is from the Oregon Development Corporation.
Madam Chair, if
do you want to come forward then, if you do, so we put on the record. Senator Hanby had a question for you.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'll give you a little space.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a truth squad, let me say that based on the testimony, the only thing that I would agree with is that we are Oregon Human Development Corporation. We do have a school. We have never applied to the Portland PIC for a welding contract. James Johnson has never been a member of our board of directors, and the any time that we have done proposals with either the Portland Pick or some of the other contractors, people who have an interest in our project have said they're not part of the system and have not voted on it. So.
Okay, but I guess the question was, are you a nonprofit or?
We are a nonprofit organization.
I don't really want to get into a.
No, I won't get into it. We direct on it.
Yeah.
But I could.
We could go back and forth with respect to the situation. Basically, I think the question was just whether you're a profit or a nonprofit. Thank you. Obviously, there's a dispute between what the facts of that particular situation were. Okay, Mr. Plimpton, are you completed?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm through. Advisory.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Bob Pierce, Boilermakers Local 72, and former director of Boilermakers Training. I want to address this morning some of the bills that are in this package, particularly Senate Bills 266 and 271. First of all, both these bills make reference to
has control over their budget and their expenditure of their funds, and that perhaps we might have an interest in how effective this program is, and perhaps we might have an interest in having the kind of data that we can make a judgment with respect. And some of that money is discretionary. I mean, we do have, if the Legislative Assembly chooses to make some policy decisions about how that money is going to be spent, we can do so. In Oregon, as in most states, the legislature simply have not been involved very much in this program. It's been mainly out of the governor's offices. And I think that we have an obligation. When we are, that money is subject to ways and means. And I think that we need to have, and I suppose someone can say, well, the Legislative Assembly doesn't need the data. It's more important for us. We don't want to have to generate the data. I don't think we'd accept that from any other agency that we're involved with the expenditure of the money.
Could, Madam Chair, also, we have been in conversation with my organization, with your staff and your office. We are interested in adjusting our database and assisting in the data collection. I don't want to sound like we're not willing to assist. We are. It's what are we trying to gain? I mean, I think that the issues that the information that you request is achievable, and we can acquire it. Some of the issues have taken us a longer period of time because we've had to redo our database because as we set it up, it didn't address your concerns.
Right, but I think this program needs to understand that you're under the jurisdiction of the Legislative Assembly with regard to the expenditure of your money.
Certainly.
And when we're dealing with millions and tens of millions of dollars of public money, we do expect accountability. And I think that that is our responsibility as elected officials. Those are our taxpayers out there. The money is.
Absolutely. Your comments sound very similar to our board of directors and our private industry council. They have the same request in terms of accountability all the way through the line.
But they are not elected by the people of Oregon to administer this program.
True, but our local elected officials feel the same way in terms of the local concerns of their local counties as county commissioners and judges.
And I would suggest in many other states there are more centralized policy controls from the administration point of view. And I grant you, this is probably one of the most decentralized programs in the country. Now, this is being touted as something good.
Mm-hmm.
And in some aspects it can be good, but it also has some very risky aspects with respect to quality control and also with respect to our liability as the state government for screw-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Starkovich?
Do you think the private industry councils should be subject to performance audits by the Secretary of State?
Performance audits.
Performance audit to make sure that the money is being spent not just financially in a financially sound way, as a financial audit would show, but that the dollars are being spent programmatically the way that they're supposed to be spent. There's been a recent Attorney General's opinion that the Secretary of State doesn't have that performance audit power, but there is a bill in this assembly to give her that power, give that office that power. And I was wondering if that should pass, should that power include the power to do performance audits of the private industry councils and of the consortium? And it may very well exist if that bill passes, I'm not sure.
Well, the monitoring questions come up, just the whole risk management concept our board has dealt with over and over. In fact, have written many letters regarding it, because it seems that whereas we have an annual audit that deals with the financial end, we also have the state doing risk managed monitoring of, are we following the letter of the law in terms of how we spend the money? More than just the money, the services that are provided, and are the people eligible to receive those services? The private industry council has already, in many cases, been involved also to do a more evaluative interviewing participants, calling employers, finding out if the money went and dealt with a disadvantaged individual in a quality way, and trying to evaluate the word quality. And so I think we've got lots of layers of that occurring now, and it sounds like this might be an additional one. And once again, the concern of the board, I think, would be, could we consolidate it? Could we take a consolidated approach to our review and our audit and our monitoring instead of 15 or 16? Because, and it's not that we don't care to assist in that. It's simply for every day for a different auditing firm or a different monitor, that's time away from other things and dollar support staff time, which take it away from either developing training curriculum competencies, doing outreach and recruitment, intake eligibility. There's a point where you can't do all that is expected, and it's balancing that administrative expectation with services. And I don't think we would be opposed at all to come look at our program, evaluate, help us answer the quality issues.
Well, okay, but I mean, you have to remember, another way of making Senator Hendrickson's point is that we're not equal partners in this relationship. I mean, it's not come on by and attend one of our slide presentations, which I did, and it was very informative. It was my first real introduction to the program up at the Clackamas County PIC in Oregon City area. Very good presentation. I'm not critical of it, but the ultimate responsibility lies with the Oregon legislature. And so it seems to me that while your cooperation is necessary and essential if the program is to work, the responsibility lies here, and the general question is, what kind of information does the legislature think it needs, they need, to feel comfortable with the way the program is being administered? And I guess the reason for a lot of these bills is that we see a great diversity amongst the local PICs, which is fine from one perspective,
mm-hmm.
but from the perspective of the legislature of having a good handle on how these programs are operating, it's a little confusing.
Sure.
And it's, I hope we don't create another, heaven help me for making this analogy, Senator Hendrickson, another state system of higher education structure where we grant, in that case,
I wouldn't argue with you.
$400 million a biennium and never see the budget.
Yeah.
Essentially. I hope we don't do that here.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator,
I've been listening to the conversation this morning. I've listened to the conversation and witnesses in the past. I doubt very seriously that the passage of these bills we have before us would improve the program. Overall improvement of the program. And in fact, I'm not so sure but what they would go ahead and harm the program in some way or another. And I know I've shared my concerns with you and all, and I'm prepared to vote on one bill. The first one up, change in the membership. But beyond that, I'm not going to vote yes on those bills. I'm not convinced the need to change what we have now. And I don't think any strong arguments have been made to make that change. And I'm convinced that by making some of these changes will probably harm the program. You know, we as legislators think we're experts. And quite frankly, we're not. We're not specialists in any field. We're like a doctor, some of our doctors, general practitioners. We're not specialists. And here we're looking at a lot of these things The program hasn't been in effect that long, and I don't think that we've really had a good opportunity to evaluate it. Now we're immediately going to step in here and start making adjustments. It's the same thing. I'm not an auto mechanic, and I live in an area where we have vehicle inspection, inspection. So I made that mistake one time of trying to adjust my carburetor so it would pass vehicle inspection. I had that damn thing so fouled up I had to take it to a garage. And I just think that we might be doing pretty much the same thing here. But I'm going to leave at 9:40.
All right.
I have an
You're already overdue. I know how your feelings are. I disagree with you.
Okay, I have a lot of people disagreeing with
you. I will close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 266.
Thank you very much.
Senator Otto moves Senate Bill 266 to forward with the DuPass recommendations. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Only the cost of fiscal impact statement or done by Gary Weeks, analyst. We are adding Would this delete any of the legislative representation that we currently have?
No, the governor could keep the members he's chosen under some other categories, but it would allow the leadership of the next legislature
to add.
And I feel this is very important, regardless of which party controls the legislature, which party controls the governor's office. I think what we're talking here is a functional issue with respect to the prerogatives of the institution of the legislature to be involved in this program. And I think that you get strength from having that kind of check and balance. And I think when you have the governor controlling who from the Legislative Assembly is going to represent the Legislative Assembly, that weakens that kind of check and balance. And, but my understanding is that the governor could retain, and certainly this bill is not directed to the individuals that serve on there that were designated by the governor, but it has to do with the ability of this body to control that.
$57,000 added to the 85-87 biennium for the, five new members. Does it mean the bill has to then go before Ways and Means, or do
No, this bill doesn't have a subsequent referral. This is not general fund money, although it would,
the dollars would be
taken included within their expenditure authorization. I would like to take a vote before Senator Otto leaves.
Okay. Going.
Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator House?
No.
Senator Dernstedt?
No.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Otto. I'd like to move on to the next bill. Does everybody have, you should have a packet, kind of a workbook packet, which has the bills and proposed amendments. I think Senator Otto has expressed a concern that we don't have the expertise to deal with this issue. I think, though, that we have some basic issues which we need to grapple with today, and that is getting legislative involvement and accountability of this very large program which expends public money and which we as state government have liability for. We've heard the risk management people talk about that liability. We heard the Attorney General's office. So some people may not feel it's legitimate for the legislature to take an interest in this program. And I guess that's a matter of individual choice. All right.
Chair, that's just exactly where the legislature is in the public's eye today. When the opportunity comes to do what we're supposed to do, we try to shy away, talk about all kinds of extraneous things. To me, I wanted to try to answer something. I will talk to him about that attitude. We're not experts on anything, yes, but some of us are. Some people here have had experience in other things.
Yeah. That's true. I think some members of the committee have some quite substantial experience in job training
but
programs.
You don't have to be an expert. That's not the point. You just have to know what the heck's going on.
What I am proposing on Senate Bill 267 is a way to continue to develop more information for the Legislative Assembly. I feel very strongly about this.
both having served as chairing that task force, also chairing the education committee and seeing what's happening or not happening in the area of vocational education with the current dramatic changes that are going on there. What I am proposing is a joint interim task force on employment policy, which would have a Senate and House membership, and also would have included in it an advisory committee which would be bring together, and this is one of the tremendous problems we have, there's lack of coordination among state agencies dealing with unemployed people's need for employment and training, would bring together on an advisory basis the Employment Division, the Adult and Family Services, the Division of Vocational Education, and the Vocational Education and Community Colleges, the division within the Department of Education. It will also have representatives of the Job Training Partnership Act, and the Bureau of Labor and Industries, Economic Development Department, the System of Higher Education, and the representatives of the business community and organized labor. To develop, and my hope is that this task force can develop a strategy to deal with the shifting economic base in this state and develop a strategy for what, with our limited resources, we can maximize in terms of employment and training and vocational education opportunities for our citizens, particularly those that may be displaced workers or injured workers or unemployed workers. So what I am proposing is that this would be a substitution for the present Senate Bill 267.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hamby.
Because of the infancy of the PICs throughout the state, I guess I'm prepared to sit and wait a biennium and allow them to see how well they can function and meet specifically, I think, what the intent of your amendment would be. So I'm going to have to vote against this particular amendment, but I do want you to know that I'm prepared to support 272, the performance reporting, and the report back to the next legislative assembly.
Okay.
And I think then, based on that report, I'd be more than prepared, if there were any concerns, I'd be more than prepared to support an interim
The task force is not limited to the Job Training Partnership Act.
No, I
it is an effort to try to develop a strategy, a coordinated strategy for employment and training. It is not really to be auditing the Job Training Partnership.
This might Senator Hamby's Futures Committee. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
The same kind of thing that you're going to do for unemployment that you try to do the future.
Oh, I see what you're... I apologize.
Yeah,
I was thinking it was an...
No.
Okay.
No, it's trying to...
Forgive my earlier...
It's trying to see how can we... You know, we've got so many dollars here for Adult and Family Services for employment training. We've got so many dollars for unemployment.
Right.
Well, I've got to make sure I've got four votes. I'm not going to move there, huh?
Right. Okay.
Yes.
I see what you're trying to do.
So it's really to... We don't have... We need to, I think, from a legislative point of view, review what the agencies are doing in the area and what their resources are and what barriers, as we uncovered, exist to get full participation and coordination between these programs.
Coordination. All right. Madam Chair, I'm ready to support it.
All right. I would...
Madam Chair.
Senator Ho.
Is there a fiscal impact statement? Or we certainly aren't the impact statement.
No.
This is
a brand new amendment. I might say also to the members, I am seeking grant and foundation money. I've advised the president that I think this is a pressing need for this type of a task force. I have, through the National Conference of State Legislatures, I am looking for foundation money or grant money. And I've told the president, I realize that this legislative assembly budget is tight. Well, and we have made, Marilyn has been, I've given her some leads on foundation money. So I assume that we're going to be needing to look for funding, some help on funding this, and that...
Might well even be some local foundations here.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm ready for the question.
Okay. Senator Hawk, did you have anything for you?
Well,
it's all right.
Has a motion been made?
No.
I'll comment on the motion.
Okay.
First of all, we're going to have to fill in the numbers with respect to the size of the membership of that task force.
Four and three, or three and
you
two.
You think we need to have an odd number?
Three and two.
Okay. So Senator McCoy is moving that we make that of five members. Is that three from the Senate and two from the House?
No, it'd have to be, Madam Chair, the... I almost think you'd have to have, if you're going to have an odd number, you'd have to have more from the House. That's the pattern with other...
Two and three.
With other committees.
Or one and three.
Well, this is a Senate bill, you know.
It also has to pass the House.
Well, let's talk about that when it gets there.
We could make it the Senate.
Obviously, the House could amend it if they did not find it to their liking.
Sure.
Is that a problem?
No. Whatever Senator McCoy.
Okay, Senator McCoy moves that we... Well, first of all, Senator McCoy moves the amendment to substitute for Senate Bill 267 with the blanks filled in 5, 3, and 2. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, that will be so ordered. I would like to propose an amendment. It's hand engrossed on your amendments at line 18 on the first page of LC that we include the word vocational education after remedial education of basic academic skills. We have been advised by the National Conference of State Legislatures, I always say, I want to say tours instead of tours, that there's a interest on vocational education and aspect of the coordination of these kinds of programs, and so we think it's important to include that, not only because it should be within the scope of the task force, but it may also make it easier for us to locate financial support for this particular project. Okay. Is there any objection to adding vocational education? Okay. Hearing none, that would be so ordered. Is there anything else?
I'd like to move it as amended to the floor of the Senate with the blue pass recommendation.
Senator McCoy moves Senate Bill 267 to the floor with the blue pass recommendation. Discussion.
The philosophy behind the amendment now, the bill, I can't say that I object to it. I think I'm objecting to the process of how it got here and the amount of information and public testimony that we heard on the bill. There is no impact statement. There is no, we know that the dollars are going to be real tight with, the fundings. The thing I guess I object to here is that there's no priority level, established here. It's kind of like, trust me, we'll fill the blanks in. We don't know how much it costs. We think it's a good idea, and we're going to kick it out of here with a due pass recommendation. And I'm not willing to do that. Chances are, if I'd had the information and would have discussed it, I'd have been with you. But not under those circumstances, in no way. Or any part of that.
Senator McCoy.
It appears that here we are in a situation where we're trying to save dollars for the state.
How do you know?
We're going to apply for funds. We're going to go out and beg for funds to carry this project out. If we don't get the funds, we're not going to have a project. We're not going to have a task force. But we're doing everything possible here, and I really have to commend the chairperson for doing this, trying to go out and try to get the funds from private sources and other sources to carry out a project. And because we do not have all the figures here before us, we're going to turn it down. It's a good idea. Sure, it's a good idea. That's what planning and the planning for the future is all about. And the legislature needs more of this. We're constantly talking about what we don't, people are talking about what we don't do and what we should be doing. And these are the kind of things we should be doing. That's my response.
Okay.
Being negative, you can be negative and demand all of these
doggone dollars in place and all that sort of thing, you would. But if they're not there, they're just not there.
Cheyenne, did you want to make
Madam Chair, as a matter of clarification, in the amendments, the one sub B, the task force is an interim committee for the purposes of ORS 171. That reference indicates that the money would come from monies available to the Legislative Assembly within the interim, whatever the leadership in each house decided could be appropriated to this task force. I don't believe there's usually a separate fiscal impact statement prepared when something becomes an interim committee, but rather that's considered as part of the larger picture. Also, by reference to the ORS 171, Council has advised us that does authorize the group to get or receive and expend grant money should that become available. The actual budget for the committee would depend on the number of meetings, the number of members, and the final cost of printing any report and so on, which is usually developed, in the past anyway, has been developed at the beginning of the interim. So it would be difficult to have a detailed cost estimate before knowing those details.
I thank you for that clarification, because that is part of the normal interim process. And I have already talked to the president about this, my hope that we can have such a task force, and the recognition that I know it's going to be difficult in terms of the funding, and that my goals are going to be to seek outside funding to assist that in.
Madam Chair, we make for the motion, accept a friendly amendment, that recognizing that some of the advisory committee members may well have mileage paid from their own source of employment, such as Adult Family Services.
Absolutely correct. In fact, I made that mention to staff that that was to be changed.
But we add line 6, page 2, members of the advisory committee who are not members of the legislative
or state employees.
Or may be entitled to, and allow.
Yes, that's a point that, well taken. I mentioned that yesterday, okay. Because those agency representatives will be going as part of their employment, and they will be reimbursed on that basis.
Okay.
But what was the language, or maybe?
I just said, are not members of the Legislative Assembly, may be entitled to reimbursement, and then allow those that are covered by mileage expenses to waive the.
Is there any objection to that amendment? So, Warden, I thank you for bringing that up, Senator Hawk. Senator Hawk, do you feel any less anxious about this? But do you understand? No, it is an interim committee, so it's subject to the normal spending.
I'm
sorry I didn't articulate that
better. Yes, Madam Chair, I think we really should talk about that and talk about our priorities. What I'm concerned about is there may be other committees out of this priority that we want to form, or at least we want to talk about, instead of having to decide specifically on this committee as far as going out and getting extra funds, balancing and all about that.
Cheyenne explained the statutory provision that refers to authorizes us to do that. It allows us to do that. Senator McCoy?
No, that's
okay. I might say I have requested the President that we have a joint interim education labor committee. I think obviously it is going to be up to the leadership to determine. That is the prerogative of leadership to determine those interim committees. So I think that what I view the role of the committee as is that we, if we feel there's a worthwhile project, we send it forward. Obviously, the leadership is going to make some decisions with respect to the amount of money the legislative assembly has for expenditure, and your committee chair expects to hustle money to see if I can get the foundation money or something else to fund this. Okay. Any further discussion? If not, we'll quick call the roll.
Senator
Hale?
Aye. Senator
Howe? No.
Senator
Bernstein? No.
Senator
McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto? Senator
Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye.
So ordered. All right, we have a floor session at 10 o'clock. I would like to ask all of you to check your calendars for next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. And to advise me or Cheyenne
with respect to your availability for a work session. We've got this hearing room scheduled in anticipation that we will be able to schedule another special.
Tuesday night's particularly bad for me. I have a 3 to 5 and a 5 to 7.
Committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's on Tuesdays and Thursdays the same way.
No, I've got a 5 to 7 on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
You've got 5 to 7.
Well,
listen, I know I'm in the same boat myself.
Okay, that's fine.